Hi, everybody. I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Karen.
Hey, everybody. I'm Beth. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Beth.
Okay, so do you want to kind of summarize what we're up to? You're good at that.
So step one, we're powerless. We're not only powerless over alcohol, but we're powerless over the delusional mind. We're powerless over untreated alcoholism. We're powerless over the way that the world responds to us. You know, the whole focus of this run through is to lean in. And when we look at powerlessness, you know, I'm not powerless. I'm powerless over my reaction, but I'm not powerless over my response. And so my goal for this step work, when, you know, I've got time and I'm not picking up a drink and I'm not acting like a complete D-bag all the time, you know, my focus is to respond to the world instead of react. And so I'm powerless over my reactions. I'm powerless over what other people think of me. And the only way to get acceptance with that for me is to lean in on a power greater than myself and understand that is the only power that's going to restore me or bring me for the first time in my life sanity. And once I get a glimmer of what that relationship can do, I turn my will and my life over it. And to lean in means to completely abandon myself to him. And in order to move forward, I've got to clean the wreckage of the past. So we move into the inventory, and we do that fifth step, abandoning, you know, everything on the table. Everything goes on the table. And, you know, we take that quiet hour after our inventory, after our fifth step, to make sure that everything is where it needs to be, and I've shared everything. And then I can start to get ready to look at these character defects and decide, am I really willing to give them root and branch to my God? And those that I'm not willing to do that with, I do some exercises or I do some prayer, and I, you know, I start to look at, you know, what's the payoff and the consequence of these things that I'm not willing to give God. And then in seven, we give him the God. And we let him do the work, because I can't manage my characteristics, whether they're in an extreme or not, I can't manage them. So I have to, again, lean in on God and allow him to help me be the person he needs me to be to carry out his will for me. And so now we're at step eight, which we get from our inventory. It's all those people on our inventory.
So we're on page 76. What is it? The third paragraph down. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. So let's look at steps eight and nine. We have a list of all the persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Personally, I love 8 and 9 because this is where, I mean, the promises are at the end of talking about these two steps. This is where I really noticed things changing in my life. And I hadn't really thought about it. And when Beth was kind of going over the other steps, I think without knowing it, this is probably where I really was leaning in when I was going through the work, because I had had such amazing proof of God working in my life through 1 through 7. So it doesn't mean that I liked going and making amends. I mean, my list was long. But I was ready. I was sick of living in that, like, you know, not looking the world in the eyes. I just, all this shame-based life just wasn't fitting anymore. Things that used to, I would wear very well, just weren't fitting anymore. God was changing me in spite of myself. So I was really ready to venture out on this one. And a lot of hesitation, but did it anyway. I guess, like, I probably do all the steps that way.
Me too.
And it talks a little bit in the book about how, you know, not going in kind of being preachy and gaudy and, you know, the heel kind of thing. And this is probably the place, too, where I can remember, like, just being really fired up about the way God was working in my life. And Beth, in her gracious way, was kind of like telling me to tone it down a little bit. I can't remember how you said it. You were talking about there's the and in the program, I think your way of saying it now that I reflect back on it was that you're a walking big book. It's more about how you live than what you say. I think that's kind of what you told me. So, you know, in preparation of this, I had my list, I had my names, and I wanted to do, you know, because I had years back in the past, so I like kind of wanted to do a grocery list. It's really what I wanted to go to people with. I did this, I yelled at you at this party, I made an idiot out of myself in this way. And that stuff kind of kept me away from the meat of it, the emotional part of it, the really the severity of it. Yeah. So my beginning, because Beth had me do them on cards, was, you know, well, it won't fit on a card. You don't know what I have to apologize for. I mean, it's like this long and this big. And just in itself, that was where we had to kind of break it down and really look, what is it? What is the damage that I have done? And what is it that I need to clean up?
I know a lot of, like, so I know with my dad, a lot of it boiled down to, I could have been a better daughter, mm-hmm. right? So there's certain things that we can't say in an amends. And so I could have been a better daughter. You deserved a better daughter, wrapped up a lot of that. And as we get into 9, we'll talk about, like, the questions on the cards and stuff. But 8 isn't always as easy as just making the list and writing the cards. You know what I mean? I love the way that you said that. It's not about the fact that I stole your, you know, silver dollars and spent them all at face value for candy. And, you know, it wasn't so much about that. It's the deeper level of stuff. And, it, you know, also the thing I want to be very clear about is that we don't get to make amends so that we feel better. Right. We could say a lot of things that would make us feel better, and a lot of those things are going to get wrapped into, I could have been a better daughter. I could have been a better wife. I can tell you that affairs are a really touchy subject, and I know a lot of people that have had them. And it needs to be a discussion. It needs to be a pretty lengthy conversation on how that's going to be handled in amends. And it goes over it in the book that is it in the family afterward that it actually goes over?
No,
this?
It goes over it, I think, in this one.
In this one, okay. Yeah. Yep. So if she knows or if he knows, then we fess up to it and we talk about it. But if they don't know, we have to have a conversation about, does this get put on the table or not? And the only person in the world that can make that decision is the person making the amends. And they can get guidance from a therapist. They can get guidance from you as a sponsor. They can get guidance from their, you know, their ride or dies in the program. But ultimately, in order to really take responsibility for their recovery, they have to make the decision. Therefore, they are the only ones responsible for the consequences of that decision, whether they be good or bad, or positive or negative. There is no good or bad. So I like taking my time with my amends cards. There's not very much time. There's only a couple of days, if that, for me, between my fifth step and writing my 9-step cards. And I will start writing my 9-step cards, which is my 8th step for me, even if I'm not willing. I know what I need to write on those. And the further I get away from my 5th step, the less I know. My delusional mind takes over almost instantaneously and starts forgetting the wreckage that I caused. And not all of it made it down on the paper during the 5th step. Some of it was just sinking in. And so I try to write these cards as quickly as possible. And then I take them to my sponsor and we read them. And, you know, really good word of advice for anybody writing amends cards. If the words, if you, because, or what are some of the other ones? And?
Probably.
Like, if these words start coming out of your pen, just cross them out, write a period. Like, don't rewrite the sentence, especially if the but or the because If those two words start to come out of your pencil, just cross it out and write period and let your sponsor read what you wrote, because we only want to justify ourselves when we get a little too vulnerable. When we get a little too honest, we want to justify it. So I can feel because I can feel those things coming out of my pen, and I just stop my pen right there and squiggle a little bit, make it a period, and move on. And most of the time I don't even read what I wrote because I'll want to cross it out. But that, if you can get to a place where you're writing amends cards like that, that's a hardcore lean-in amends. That's the kind of amends that you walk away from free and clear. Really 100% taking responsibility for your part in the relationship. And it's not about the fact that I stole my dad's silver dollars. It's the fact that he trusted me and I betrayed that trust. He deserved a better daughter. He really did. And because I made a heartfelt, rigorously honest amends, after about a year and a half, he got to a place where he was able to drop the walls, and I got to be the daughter he deserved, which was really hard. It was no easy feat to be the daughter my dad deserved. But I got that opportunity. And I have to tell you, like, my dad passed away in 2005. I cannot imagine how hard it would be to become the daughter he deserved after he passed away. Right. If we have that opportunity, if God is nudging you, right? I think we talked about this last week. Everybody in the world gets nudged, but if you don't listen, God can't do anything about it. I can tell you, if I got nudged and I didn't do something, I would regret that for the rest of my life. I look at the human being that I'm able to be today, almost 2020, and I was not able to be this person in 2005. And the person that I was able to be for him was a push. It was not easy to keep my mouth shut. It was not easy to show up no matter how much notice he did or did not give me. And it was hard, and it wasn't perfect, but God gave me what I needed for the push. And I'm so grateful that when my dad passed away, there was nothing left unsaid. There was no regrets. We didn't have a perfect relationship, but we had an honest relationship. He told me before he died that he was proud of me. Literally took me by both of my shoulders in front of my brothers, of which he never said that to. Maybe that's a little bit of pride for me, but I don't give a shit. And he goes, "Did I ever tell you how proud I am of you?" And I'm like, "Well, no, you haven't." And he goes, "I am so proud of you." And it's like, you know, I went to him and I asked him before I got married, I said, "What do you think about me converting to Judaism?" Which I wound up not doing until 2012. But this was in 2001. I went to him and I said, "What do you think about me converting? Do you think Grandma and Grandpa will be okay with it?" They're Sicilian. They're Catholic. My grandmother's super Catholic. And my dad said to me, he said, "You have more faith in whatever you do with your faith, in as long as it keeps you doing what you're doing." He would never say keep you sober. But he goes, "If that helps you keep you doing what you're doing," he goes, "you do whatever you need to do with your God." And I didn't wind up converting until 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 12, because I moved back to New Jersey in 2013. And but it was, you know what I mean? Like, I knew I had my dad's blessing because we had these conversations. And so when we write these cards, I feel like I just got off on a tangent again. But when we write these cards, this is why we lean in, right? We're really looking to literally clean the damn slate. What good is it if I walk away from an amends that he accepts still feeling ashamed about A, B, or C? What good is it? Half measures are going to avail me nothing.
And if you never did cards, literally they're just note cards. And, you know, I think Beth hit on a couple points of why that can be so effective and why it really worked for us the way that we did it is because when we're talking to somebody, I mean, first of all, you know, you're bringing your authentic self. And it's very hard or more difficult for somebody to deny you being authentic than words on a paper. That's what people relate to, when you're vulnerable and you're true and you're your real self. And then you have what it has, you know, the meat of it, of what it has come down to, and you're not justifying, because that's what we've done our whole life when we got the because and, you know, all the reasons why. I mean, that's like, you know, and we're doing this at not harming anybody, so that can be inflicting more pain on the people that we've already hurt. So we're kind of clear that we haven't done that. And then if you're like I am, as I talk and I watch people's reactions, I'll change what I'm saying. Or if they get emotional or if they get angry, yeah, then I might start talking more or faster and I'm throwing in some things, you know, putting some weight to my argument because next thing I feel I have to defend. And this card that I've gone in, this true apology or this true accountability, that's the word I want to say, that I am making all of a sudden has become this whole preachy, woo, you know, big fluff thing. Mm. And that's all that I was anyway. There was never any meat to what I said, or any value or any authenticity. So that keeps me on track. This is what I've come to say. This is what I say. So I don't get into that, you know, meeting, you know, resistance with resistance. And so it doesn't start switching up. And I achieve what it is that I'm coming to say. And, you know, like, you know, examples of that, Beth talked about her dad. You know, my mom, you know, had been around the rooms for a while. This was not the first time I'd made amends to my mom. And when I first got sober, I can remember her doing the hand up, like, no, we're not doing this. You know, I lived through your alcoholism. I don't need to hear it. This time when I got sober, like I said, Mom, I'd like to sit down and talk to you. She's like, okay, like I'm ready. Like I guess she thought she earned it, you know, which she had. And you know, the whole kind of meat of it was just that I had not been the daughter that I wanted to be and that she deserved. And all the pain that she had gone through worrying about me, because I was one of those hospitals, jails, institutions, and all of that. So it was just all that, you know, the sleepless nights and the pain that brought her. And I can remember, you know, on the back of the card, there's the three questions. You know, is there anything that I've missed that I haven't made amends for that I need to clean up? Do you want to tell me how you feel about this and how do I make these matters right or can I make these matters right? And my mom looked at me and she said, yeah, like she thought about it and just, I mean, as clear as like me reading off the card, she said, I'd like you to be to love me as unconditionally as I've loved you through your whole life as I'm getting older. Yeah. And Beth can tell you there were a lot of phone calls that I said, oh, God, do I have to be unconditional about this? you know, because if I say yes, then I have to own that. I have to live up to that because that's the daughter she deserved. And I will tell you, at the end, when my mom was dying and hospice came in and everything, we have four kids, all of us willing to take my mom. It was my house that she wanted to come to. She said that's where she felt most comfortable and the most safe. Now, you want to talk about, like, the promises coming, you know, true in your life, because I was the chaos kid. I was the troublemaker. And she's like, yeah, I want to go to Karen's house. So, you know, it really does work. It's pretty amazing. And unconditional, whoo, that's a toughie. And doing it after step five, five and six. Another example of that is I come to this realization, you know, I love to do your inventory much better than I like to do mine. And when I had done my one brother, who lives on California, moved there 20 years ago, I can remember like doing him on my fifth step, and oh, I was so pissed. He never wanted to be part of my life. He never had any interest in me, no interest in my kids, never called. I mean, oh, I had a big list on him. And couldn't quite get to the part of what was my part, because I mean, I had no interaction with this brother, and like, what is my part or whatever? And you know, point blank, Beth just said, well, how many times did you reach out to him? How many times did you call him? And I went, oh, shit. Stopped me in my tracks. So when I made amends with my brother, who I will tell you, I don't want to sound that like I'm bravado when I am not. He came for my mom's 80th surprise party. I only see him once every couple of years. He had been in my home for 3 days. It was 2 hours before he was to fly out that I made the amends. I was waiting till the final hour. I had all this time to do it. He's getting ready, packing for the airplane. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, because I'm not going to see him again for a couple more years. So, and now we've got a house full of people. I had all these great moments to do it, chickened out, everything. I have to call him in my bedroom, say, you know, can I talk to you? Made the amends about how I never reached out in his life. I was not the sister that I wanted to be. And on the back of the card, is there anything that I haven't made right or that I need to clean up that I haven't cleaned up? And he said, do you remember that money that I loaned you for your first house? And you know how like something's in the back of your mind, but after years of telling yourself it isn't there, if you're like me, you get very good at changing it into, I didn't have any money I owed him. And as soon as he said it, I knew it. I could feel it from my head to my toe, but I could have never brought it out of my consciousness on my own, ever. And I said, I never paid you that money back. I knew I hadn't, which was, you know, he just caught me so off guard. And he said, no, he said, you didn't. And I said, how much was it? He said, $10,000. And I said, okay, I will take a look at that, and I will get back to you in 24 hours, which is what my sponsor tells me to do when I get stopped in my tracks or somebody asks something of me that I don't know what to say. Either I'll talk to my sponsor or I'll get back to you in 24 hours. So he left. I pick up the phone. I call Beth. Oh, my God, I owe my brother $10,000. What do I do? You know, and she's like, well, does he want it in payments? Does he want it in one lump sum? I'm like, I don't know. You know, she's like, well, these are the questions you need to ask. And, you know, so I call him back. He's like, one lump sum is fine. I said, he said, but payments are okay. I said, okay, I can do $500 a month. Is that sufficient? He says, yes, it is. And I'm not going to charge you interest, needless to say. I'm, you know, okay, because this is, you know, 15, 20 years. And, you know, he'd never, this is the brother that I said so miserable and he's mean and, my list of things. He never told one person in my family that I owed him that money. He never complained about it because I'd have been one like saying to my mom, do you remember that money Danny owes me? I'd have been telling my sister. I'd have been telling my other brother. He never told one soul that I owed him this money. So for over 2 years, I sent him $500 a month and I wrote him a letter because Beth's response to me was, how have you ever reached out to him? How, what part have you, like, tried to get involved in his life? So I would write him a letter every month with the check. So for 2.5 years, I wrote him a letter. Can't say it's not quite the sunshine story that I wanted to be. He never wrote me back. He never mentioned the letters. He never said anything of that. But since my mom has passed, the only person in the family that he reaches out to is me. So I think things happen, you know, in ways, like you say, you know, sometimes it's not that immediate. But this is the kind of stuff that was like going on with me with 8 and 9. And, you know, paying that money back, it's, even though it's a lot, it wasn't so much that. It was just things that I felt shame, and I really didn't even know why. I was so shame-based. But as I cleaned this stuff up and wasn't doing your inventory and was being accountable for me, life was really changing. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So, you know, the black and white of the book talks about, you know, it doesn't matter if you like them or you don't like them. What we have to remember when we walk out of 8 and into 9 is that it's no longer about us. It's not about me. I'm not going there to make myself feel better. I'm not going there for any other reason. Does that need to go that way? I'm not going there for any other reason than to put out on the table a safe environment for this other human being to get some healing from the damage that I caused. Period. And I've gotten approached, to put it mildly, by other people in the program that have other views. And it's one of the only things that I will never bend on until God sees fit to bend me. But I can never, ever, ever allow myself to walk into an amends with the intent of making myself feel better. That's not why I'm here. It doesn't say that anywhere in the ninth step amends in the book. And I will literally go toe-to-toe with anybody, even if they're, 6'4" and 280 pounds. I don't care. Because then I'll just call my husband and he'll jujitsu them. But my job is to create the safe space that was so freely created for me. We are so effing lucky that we have sponsors that we can go sit down with. We have meetings we can go to. We're surrounded 24/7, if we want to be, by people that not only share our common problem, but share our common solution and understand the ins and outs and the ups and downs, who have been where we're at, who have been where we want to go, who have, you know what I mean? Like, there isn't anything that can happen in my measly little life that I can't find somebody in AA that hasn't already been through it and knows what to do. Most people in the world don't have any of that. None of it. I talk to people, like, out in the real world. There's this one woman, she's a referent of mine for work. She, like, can't wait to meet with me every month. She goes, Beth, she goes, I love sitting down with you. She goes, I can say whatever I want. And I'm like, well, yeah. Can't you always say what you want? Right?
Yeah.
No. Most people can't. So my job in this nine-step amends is to go and open up the door, sit down in the room, create a safe environment with no alcoholic reactions, and give this other human being the opportunity to understand what it feels like to be safe and protected and able to say whatever it is they need to say. That second question, so the first question is there anything I've done that I'm not aware of? Like, I mean, let's face it, we've got blinders on all the time. And if we're making amends from when we're drinking, I can't even tell you how long of my life I spent in a blackout, so I don't even know what I did because I wasn't there. But in that second question, can you tell me how this made you feel? So many people in this world never get that asked that question. Never. How sad is that? That we sit there and we abuse and we harm, sometimes meaning to and sometimes not meaning to, but it's regardless, the person still gets harmed. And to sit there with the person that harmed you and say, bring it. Let me know how that affected you. What was that experience like for you? And then on top of that, to sit there and offer, what can I do to make it better? You can't think of something right now? I'm around forever. Anything you need, you call me. I'll make it right. Now, we don't let ourselves get walked on, right? We're neither servile nor scraping. But when we're standing in God's light, we don't have to be. We don't have to try. All we have to do is stand in God's light. What can I do to make this better? You could buy me a new car. No.
Don't even have to call your sponsor on that
one.
You
don't even have to call your sponsor on that. Unless you stole their car and cracked it up, then that might be, you might want to talk to your sponsor about that shit. But just remember that that is the opportunity that you're really given when you go and sit down for an amends. There will be people that aren't ready. That's okay. We stand at the ready, and we let them know. If and when you are ever ready to allow me to make amends and to take responsibility for my part only, you let me know. We stand at the ready until we die, period.
Because we respect that. If someone says, and my son did that,
you know, he was, what, 24 at the time I got sober. And when I sat down with him, he saw me bring the card out of my purse, and the hand went up. He goes, nope, not doing that, Mom.
Is that in the diner?
He said, Perkins in Ohio. Yeah. Yep, nope, not doing it, Mom. And I'm like, doing what? And he said, no. And I said, okay, if you ever want to hear it or want to talk about it, I'm here. Just like Beth said, because to him, that would have been more pain. And he just, you know, it's not for me to say, you're to be ready now, you're not to be ready now, you're to hear now, because that's for me to feel better. Mm-hmm. And I wanted him to hear it, because I like to feel better. And I want people to throw their arms around me and say, I forgive you, and, you know, all of those things. But you also get to that place, if it isn't real and it isn't genuine, then it's like anything else, how it used to be, then it's of no value. And I had to respect that. He just said no. And he's still, here we are. And we have a great relationship, but he just doesn't want to hear it. For some people, and here again, we do not cause more harm. They have, and I'll say even my family, because I was such a blackout drinker, I mean, a lot of the stuff I did, I do not remember the stuff they went through. And it was so painful for them. It was like, we do not want to live it again. We want to heal. And I mean, it's that whole, whew. And I think, you know, on the top of 77, I love this sentence. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people about us. How can I be of service? You know, when do I show up with no agenda, no manipulation, no not what do I need to do to get you to do what I just, how can I be of service? And then living that way, not just this one sitting, you know, and this chapter talks about those living amends and how it's really, you know, how am I from this day-to-day process? You know, what do I do when I walk away and the card goes away? And, you know, I'm dealing with that in my house right now. I have, you know, my guy's grieving from the loss of his son. It's only been 2 months. And he's having a really hard time. And this is a guy that's happy-go-lucky on top of the world, and he's short, and he's impatient, and mean without even realizing it. He's grieving profoundly. Yeah. And you can feel it when you walk in my house. I can. I can feel the energy of that. So it's on a day-to-day, you know, because I made amends to him. I have not been, you know, the partner with you that you deserve. I have not been, you know, supportive and loving. So now, you know, it's kind of like when the shit hits the fan. How am I going to be day after day after day after day? I can be good for one day at any time. most of the time. Yeah. So I think it's just really important of how can I be of service and going in that helpful. And, you know, I hear a lot from the girls that I sponsor. Well, you don't understand what they did to me. Mm-hmm. And this isn't their inventory. This is your side of the street. And this is your stuff to clean up. And we never go. It says under no condition do we criticize or do we argue. So when you say, you know, do you want to tell, you know, would you like to tell me how this makes you feel? Whatever they say, we just listen because, you know, feelings aren't facts. So it's not like I have to agree or disagree or anything, but just to listen. And some of the stuff that was said to me was, you know, it was a lot, but they've never had the chance to say it.
Yep. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes a man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we're doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they'll offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We've made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. Most alcoholics owe money, so it goes into, we pay our creditors. You know, we call our creditors and go, yep, getting sober, need to pay this off. What do I need to do? I can tell you that, you know, finances have been a struggle for my husband and I. Thank God we both make good money, because we also spend good money, apparently. And there have been multiple times in my recovery where I've had to call creditors and go, I screwed up. What do I have to do? And nobody has ever been like, you need to pay it now. Not one person has ever been like that. One. And my in-laws stepped up and helped us, and we paid them back, and we were okay. But, you know, it's a struggle for us. So I'm pretty humble when it comes to finances. Like, I also refuse to borrow money from anybody anymore because I suck at it. We have to be willing to go to jail. I know a guy that went out to a police department and admit all the things that he broke the law on, and they just basically didn't want to deal with the paperwork, so they told him to leave. but we have to be smart about this, which is why we write our 8-step cards, we write the questions on the back, and we go over them with our sponsor or whoever you're going through the work with.
It comes after the first seven steps,
right. If you haven't been through the steps, please don't go home and write 9-step cards and just go out there and make amends. Like, you know, please don't do that. I will come and find you and hit you. I actually had a sponsee that fired me after this conversation, but she was gearing up for her 6th step and was going to see her daughter, who was 9 months pregnant, and decided that she was going to make amends to her that weekend before even calling or telling me that. And basically what she did was she pulled some borderline personality crap and used the amends process to twist into her daughter to the point where she was like sobbing, crying, feeling insanely guilty, and then came back and sat down with me and told me it was my fault. So I looked at her. I was so pissed off. Do I get pissed off at my sponsees? Mm-mm. Never get pissed off at my, because I don't give a shit. Mm-mm. What you do, it's not my life. This pissed me off. This poor 9-month pregnant girl from her mother literally got twisted about because her mother decided to make amends on her own. So please don't do that. That's a tale. It's a tale of awfulness. It's a warning to all of you. You're causing more harm when you don't take direction on your 9-step amends. Talk to your sponsor about it before you go and do it. Stick to the card. Because like Karen was saying, you know, I can go off on tangents. None of you have seen that. You know what I mean? So stick to the frickin' card, and if they want to talk about something afterwards, that's fine. But stick to the card. Has anybody seen, everybody knows Thanos? Does everybody know Avengers, Thanos? Mm-mm. So Thanos has this ring where he can, like, is it the Reality Stone? Right? Where he can make everything look like we're in a yellow room with
I think it's the Infinity Stone.
Infinity, yes.
It's the Infinity Stone? Okay. So the Infinity Stone, he can literally shape this room to make it look like this, but then reality, that's why I thought it was the Reality Stone, because he can literally, like, we're really sitting in a burning building, but he can make it look like this, right? I know, this is totally off topic, but it's awesome. I love Thanos.
That's why we have cards.
This is why we have cards, people. So anyway, there's nothing worse than drawing somebody in. This is what we used to do as alcoholics. Drawing somebody in and promising them a safe environment only to twist the knife.
Yep.
Do you know how hurtful that is? I don't know how that poor woman could sit for another amends for the rest of her life. And I hope nobody ever has to make amends to her ever again. Because that's awful. It's just, it's callous, it's mean, and it's using this like in the worst way possible. Yeah, there's tons of manipulation in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's all manipulating us to get rid of the darkness and walk into the light. But when we take these powers and we use them for selfish reasons, I think that's the worst part. That's the worst thing that we can do. So go over your amends cards with your sponsor and then get to it. Get them done. This is the biggest place I've seen people distance themselves from Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know if they drink or not because they won't call me back, but this is where we really, really see people disappear, is through not finishing amends. this is one of the only times I'm on top of my girls. You know what I mean? You want to take 6 months to write your inventory and your life's miserable? I don't really care.
And it's not for us to decide, like,
right.
Well, these are the 10 most important and these are minor things. Like, if you have a couple left on your list or, you know, for me it was a couple cards in the
yep.
drawer. There's something about that. And, you know, I can't trust the way that my mind will, like, you know, get delusional and manipulate these things. So it's like I go after every amends as if they're all equal.
Well,
Everyone is just as important as the other one.
They are.
Because
they are
we don't
equal.
Know what it has done for other people.
And this is the only time as a sponsor that I will lean on my girls. That I will literally, like, be like, get your shit together. You have a week to make all the appointments. For your existing amends.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
It's the only time that I will lean in on my girls to make them work.
Because if you give me a month, I'll wait till, like, with my brother, 2 hours before that. I'll do it on day 29 because I'm meeting with Beth on day 30, you know. So, yeah, it's, you know, and things that are right, we just don't need to be putting them off. And that's that old behavior. I love on page 79 in that first paragraph, it says, you know, although these reparations take mm-hmm. innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. And it says personal consequences. This is the stuff you talk over with your sponsor, and you work through on those first seven steps. I had a situation, an employer that I had stolen from, and they were narcotics. I mean, this was felony crime. And I prayed hard about it. I talked it through with Beth, and I, you know, I went down there, and I told her, this is what I've done. And I was, whatever came of it, I really was at that place. That was that, you know, I was leaning in. God, do with me what you see fit. Mm-hmm. I'm here, so she didn't throw me in jail. But you know, it's that it doesn't always work out that way. But I was willing to just trust whatever needs to be done. That I just, I was willing to do it. You know, that's the more I leaned in, the more supportive my life became. The more foundation I had underneath it, which I always thought had it the other way around. The more self-sufficient I was, I thought the stronger I was. So. And that employer does call me now when she gets clients that have addiction problems.
Really?
To talk to them. Yeah. She asked me if she could do that when I said, is there anything I can do to make these matters right? She said, can I call you time to time? I don't know how to deal with this stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So we never know, right? Okay. And make sure, you know, like there was exes that I had and... extra, I wasn't married, so just affair things and that. But I went to the man I live with and I said, these are things I would like to say right, to set right in my life and make amends. How do you feel about that? Because mm-hmm. I also, now, you know, I mean, it's like that day-to-day, you know, our living amends. Just because I want to make matters right in my life doesn't mean I put him in any harm either.
Yep.
And go and see an old boyfriend. And because, you know, obviously that we're working on trust at this point. And, you know, so, I mean, we have to make sure there's a lot of pieces and parts. And that's why, you know, Beth talks about all the support that we have around us. There wasn't one amend that I didn't go to do that if Beth didn't have personal experience with it, another woman did or she put me in contact with. And there's always that I'll get back to you in 24 hours if you run into something that you don't know how to respond to.
Yeah. We have to take into consideration before we go meet with somebody, is it gonna bother my husband if I go make amends to an ex-boyfriend? Or is it gonna... So I have had multiple sponsees who are divorced and they needed to make amends to their ex-in-laws. And the way that I do it is they need to make sure that their ex-husband is okay with them contacting their ex-in-laws. And if they're not, then guess what? Sorry, that opportunity is not afforded to you anymore, period. Most of the time it is, though, like, you know... The only other thing I wanted to touch on was living amends. Anybody who tells you there's no such thing as living amends clearly isn't working a program, in my opinion, which is large. So Listen, we make direct amends and then we have to live up to it. Mm-hmm. That's what living amends is. Listen, my husband is a perfect example of this. I am the luckiest woman on the face of the earth. He screwed up like so super bad, and he made amends to me. I also made amends to him because in the process we both blew our marriage up. It was awesome. And so like we went to therapy for a year and we decided to start over, and we didn't get divorced, but we like basically operate on a whole new freaking universe now. But anyway, he made amends to me. Didn't mean that the trust was back. Mm-hmm. It took me, and my dad was like this with me too. It's really funny. So I've got this from this story from both ends. So with my husband, I want to say it was 4 years before I started to trust him again. 4 years. I remember there was the last time it happened. And when I say like something would happen, the entire thing for me, the entire thing that he did wrong would get completely unearthed and back on the table. Now, my responsibility is to not immediately just take it out on him. But I am stuck with these feelings because of his actions. So he came home and I said, I need to talk to you. And he goes, okay. So we went on the back screen porch. We both smoked at the time. And we were smoking cigarettes. And I said, this is what happened to me today. And I need you to tell me what that means, right? And he told me what that means, and we kind of looked at the situation. We made a couple calls. Turns out it was no big deal, blah, blah, blah. Never once. Now, that happened so many times over 4 years. Never once did my husband say, Jesus, Beth, get over it. It's been 2 years. It's been 3 years. It's been 4 years. And every once in a blue moon, that insecurity will come up. And yeah, does it mean something's going on with me? Yes. But having had this experience, this is now a part of something that happens to me. And I'll say, we're good, right? And he'll be like, yes. Never once, living amends to me, never once has my husband told me, it's been X amount of time, get the F over it. I'm not going to stand for this anymore. Never once. He is so kind and he is so understanding. He allows me the breath I need and he supports me and he lets me know and he shows me in every way that he possibly can that I'm okay, he's okay, we're okay. When I made amends to my dad, I had apologized to my dad 100 times. I had apologized to my dad 100 times when I was sober before I went through the book. I had 6 years when I went through the book the first time. And after I made amends to him, I had like 7 years and seven and a half years when I made amends to him. It took him until I almost had 9 years for him to actually open up to me. Never once did I say, oh man,
get over it.
Get over it. I'm sober, man.
Yeah.
He didn't backhanded me anyway, but never once did I even feel that way. And this is what it is like to walk with God for me. Every moment is its own moment. For me, every time he called me Sunday at 3 o'clock when I lived an hour away and said, be here by 4:30, never once did I feel defeated. Because I was only in the moment. It wasn't keeping score anymore. I don't keep score anymore. It's for me about an opportunity. My father feels safe enough for making himself, exposing himself and being vulnerable and asking me to come with the idea that I'll actually show up. Because how many times didn't I? And never once did I look at it as he's never going to trust me. I looked at it as an opportunity that he made himself open to me, and I get to respond. I get to show up. I get to literally take a shower in 3 minutes and jump in the car and drive 90 miles an hour up 206 to get there on time. I get to, because I really like driving fast.
page 82 talks a lot, is talking about what Beth is sharing with you about the living amends. And, it says, sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. And then down a little further, it talks about the tornado. I think we've all heard that example. I love that. The alcoholic is like a tornado, roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" So that's all about the living amends. So after you do that process, there's the ninth step promises. Your favorite thing? Nine step. We think not. We think so. Okay.
For those listening on tape, I'm severely rolling my eyes. Sorry.
It says, though, on 83, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Okay.
Okay.
As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
Yep.
If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to find a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves.
Those are pretty extravagant.
Yes, they are. What we were going to name this in the or Dave decided we were going to name this whole workshop. Are these extravagant promises?
Yes. We think so. I do. I think they're extravagant. Yeah. I think we are miracles. And those promises are more miracles. We don't deserve this. This is the promises are all grace. I don't care how much work I do. I don't care how long I go to therapy. At my core, I am an alcoholic. I am selfish. I am self-centered. I am self-seeking to the bone. Give me a day without God, and this is exactly what I revert back to. That's pretty freaking extravagant for somebody that has a core like mine. To walk around every single day, and every single time I handle a situation with, grace and dignity, blows my freaking mind. Blows most people I know's mind. And it's been interesting. I have this whole new group of people in my life over the last 2 years at my job. And my boss is very free with the comments, both positive and what I need to work on. And the things she says to me that I'm good at are all a reflection of this program. Mm. They're all a reflection of God's grace in my life. And it scares me sometimes because I'm all sorts of, I don't know how I do that. It's not like I can do it more because it's God, it's grace. It's all grace from God. And so it scares me a little bit. I'm like, I definitely need to maintain my spiritual life because if I don't, I'm so not going to be good at my job. And I think I know that it is a result of walking this path. I know that it is a result. So when I say that I do think these are extravagant, I really do. I think they are. They're not extravagant in light of standing in God's light. When I get to stand in God's light and I choose to stand in God's light, and that's the difference between taking responsibility for my sobriety and going through the work. I really do believe that if God wanted me to drink, I'd drink tonight and that would be the end of the story. There's nothing that stands in the way of me in a drink except for God. But the grace that I get from working this program, which is conditional, is a quality of life thing. I continue to choose to step into the light and allow my life to get bigger because of the book, because of the steps. I did stay sober for 6.5 years living in AA. I went to between 7 and 14 meetings a week. All of my friends were in AA, couldn't hold a job for longer than a year, was shoddy whether I had car insurance or not. Was I in grace? Yes. But was I choosing the light? No. I was just wasting God's grace. So that's the difference between me, God getting and keeping me sober, and me living a sober lifestyle and a sober life. Those are two very, very different things. There's this guy, we all know him. He goes to all of our home groups. He's got like 40 years sober. He sits in the same freaking chair every single week for as long as you can remember. And every once in a while, one of the young people in AA will sit in his chair just to watch his face turn beet red, and the veins are popping. And he's like, "That's my chair." And I'm like, "That's not the life I want." That is, I don't want to have 40 years sober and live like that. I want to have 40 years sober and have a life. I go to 1 to 2 meetings a week. That's it. I got kids. I got a job. I got friends. I got hobbies. I got, like, you know what I mean? Like, I have this whole life. I'm not going to waste God's grace and sit in AA for the rest of my life. I need to clear away the wreckage of my past so that I can go and walk with my head held high, knowing that my side of the street is as clean as it can be, knowing full well somebody's coming around the corner to remind me what needs to get cleaned up, and I need to live this life that he gave me. What a waste of grace for us to just sit here.
Absolutely.
I don't know where it's...
And the book says, you know, they will always materialize if you work for them. This grace, these promises, not just Beth, not just me, not just Sandy. I mean, everybody. Always. You know, there's always. No and ifs or buts in that one. Okay? So that's it for 8-9.